Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. Dr. Death's second season has arrived on Peacock. Edgar Ramirez plays the far-from-good doctor, and executive producer, writer, and showrunner Ashley Michael Horan joins me next in an internet radio exclusive. Also ahead, Prime Video sets its ad format agenda, how the NFL Grinch stole Christmas Day TV, Percy Jackson scores, and we offer our annual TCM Remembers tribute, including the passing of Tom Smothers. That's Tamavi Televised Remembers, and that's in our second half hour. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, and TuneIn Radio, and present on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network and more than 40 other great podcast destinations. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Our opening half hour this afternoon is brought to you by Liquid IV, fueling life's adventures and your well-being with real hydrating. 48 degrees at the top of the hour here in the Big Apple. And we welcome you on this Wednesday afternoon to a special edition of the program all about TV's current and future, our next to last one for 2023. Great guests coming your way in the half hour and hour ahead. And again, in our second half hour, we will have Tamavi Televised Remembers, our annual tribute to the men and women in front and behind the camera who passed away this year, including, as we mentioned a moment ago, one half of the Smothers brothers, Tom Smothers. More about that coming up shortly. And we want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment for our guests, or if you have some thoughts about the people that passed away that you remember this year, give us a call, 646-652-2906. That's the number you use, 646-652-2906. The number is good anyway you're catching us across the country, around the globe, here on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, Tuner Radio. You can also use our chat room. It's in business right now. It's SimonApple04 by name. You will find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Use the phone or the room. Either way, we hear you and we respond to you. And while the promo is on the air, you can connect others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on that Facebook icon, your Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, Tuner screen. We'll follow the instructions and other people can be live and interact with you. And Ashley Michael Horan, she is Dr. Death's second season, executive producer, writer, and showrunner. She'll join me here in New York after these news notes. Prime Video customers circle January 29th on your 2024 calendar. That's when the Amazon-owned television service begins an existence in two flavors, commercial-free and limited ads per hour. The limited ad version will launch here in the U.S. first, then roll out to Canada, England, and Germany February 5th and the other countries later this year. Customers wanting the existing commercial-free format will have to pay $2.99 more a month. In a letter to Prime Video consumers, Amazon maintains that the ad move will allow continued, and here I quote, investing in compelling content and keep increasing that investment over a long period of time, unquote. Prime Video anticipates it will run fewer ads than other mega content services. Apple TV Plus remains the only major mega content enterprise fully commercial-free. The National Football League's Christmas Day TV tripleheader slam dunk in viewership compared to five NBA pro basketball matchups. About 29.2 million people watched the early afternoon Raiders-Chiefs game on CBS, Paramount Plus, or Nickelodeon, more than any NFL Christmas Day game since 1989. The Ravens-49ers nightcap on ABC, ESPN Plus, and ESPN Deportes in Spanish reached 27.2 million viewers. That's the second most viewed Monday night game since 1996. Now, quickies, late additions to ABC's New Year's Rockin' Eve presentation Sunday into Monday, Cardi B, LL Cool J, a set of stand-up comedy segments with Ms. Pat and Gabriel Iglesias among the performers. That's the first, by the way, for that special. And a Guinness World Record attempt. 13.3 million people saw the opening pair of Percy Jackson and the Olympians episodes over the past week on Disney Plus and Hulu. If you missed our episode with the executive producer of that program, John Steinberg and Tom Schatz, make sure you catch our episode at blogtalkradio.com/televised, as well as our web and podcast destinations. And Tom Smothers, who with Brother Dick broke TV comedy variety barriers as the Smothers Brothers during the late 1960s, has passed away. Smothers was 86 and died yesterday in California from cancer, surrounded by his brother and family. We'll celebrate his TV achievements with Brother Dick during our Tamavi Televised Remembers segment next half hour. And that is news notes for today. The second season of Dr. Death, the anthology program based on a very popular podcast from Wondery, premiered last Thursday to rave reviews both from critics and from viewers. And joining us live to talk about it is the executive producer, writer, and showrunner of this series, now as I said, its second season. She's with me here in New York, Ashley Michael Horan. Ashley, happy holidays to you. Welcome to the program.
Happy holidays. Thank you so much for having me on so we can talk about the show.
It's a pleasure, Ashley. And at the top, what's been the response over the past week to what you've done?
Oh, well, it's been pretty incredible. You know, I think obviously it's been a strange year for TV and movies, and so I think people are looking for something new, and it's been an incredible reaction to the show, and we've gotten so much wonderful feedback, and I'm glad that, you know, generally I'm just glad that the cast and crew seem to be happy with what we've produced together. So that always feels good.
You know, Peacock, when they come out with press releases about shows like yours, wonderfully does these special notes. They give you or the showrunner, the executive, the opportunity to say something. And there's something I wanted to call to everybody's attention that you get in your notes, which goes like this. That this show is about people standing up to something bigger, for something bigger, and how their seemingly smart choices ripple out into the world to give power and voice to those who have been made to feel powerless and silence. Based on the initial reaction, do you think the audience has gotten that?
Honestly, I think so. You know, I feel like, first of all, everyone is sort of glomming on to different pieces of the story. Like people, you know, everyone has their character that they sort of feel like, I really understand this person's journey, or, you know, this character really speaks to me. But you know, and one of the biggest, most important things that we wanted to do was to show that there are so many doctors that are working to protect people, despite, you know, for every doctor death, there are a lot more people that are working hard to protect us. And I do feel like that's coming across. I hope it's coming across, you know, and as these people are sort of grabbing onto which character or storyline speaks to them the most, I feel like the one thing I'm hearing is, you know, he did such terrible things. I can't believe he got away with it. But there are all these people working so hard, you know, to make sure he was held accountable. So I really do hope that's coming across to audiences.
Yeah. I noticed in the interview you gave to the Hot Reporter that came out this morning, along with Ed Ramirez and Mandy Moore, the co-stars of this, that you also wanted to make incredibly sure that the victims' families were also well represented, what they went through, and their effort to try to stop this doctor from causing any more harm.
Mm-hmm. That's absolutely right. And, you know, it was I might have mentioned this as well, like it was really important to all of us, even from the beginning in the writer's room, to make sure that we kept the patient names as they were and told their stories as close to life as we could. Because, yeah, I think, you know that we have these two pieces of Paula's life, the personal side and the medical side. And I never wanted to equate, you know, the kind of issues and trauma that Benita went through with the patients. And so it's really all about the patients at the end of the day. That is really what everybody, all the heroes are working toward the justice for these victims. In not just in, you know, in Karolinska and Russia, as you show in the show, but of all the other kind of, you know, the history of patients that Paola Mahirini had that we don't necessarily even know about.
We are speaking with Ashley Michael Hoban. She is the executive producer, writer, and showrunner of Dr. Death, Season 2, now running on Peacock, available on smart TV sets, devices, multi-channel bundles, and in some cases through your local cable operator, especially Comcast, the parent company of NBC Universal, which is also the parent of Peacock. And Ashley joins us live from New York this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised this Wednesday afternoon. Happy you're aboard wherever you're catching us. Simon Applebaum with you live from New York, 48 degrees at the top of the hour. Let's hear you. Give us a call, 646-652-2906, and use the chat room, SimonApple04, my name. We have one more episode coming your way this year, and it'll be on Friday, less than 48 hours from now, 3 p.m. Eastern New Pacific, here on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio. And we'll also have another triple header for you to kick off 2024, next Tuesday, Wednesday, and Friday. And coming your way next Tuesday, we will have someone out of Toronto, Canada, that's trying to create new television networks here in the United States and beyond. The company is called Fast Channel TV. You'll meet the chief executive, Russell Foy. He will join us live from that wonderful Canadian city next Tuesday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, exclusively here on Tomorrow Be Televised. And incidentally, one of those networks just started a few days ago called Hip Hop TV. We are trying to arrange an interview with a person from that network either this Friday or next week right here on our program. Ashley, were you involved in the first season of Dr. Death? And if not, how did you get involved with season 2?
I was. I was a writer. You know, Patrick McManus, who created the first season, and I have been working together for about 10 years now together. And I was a writer on the first season, and I was supposed to be on set producing that first season. And the Friday before we started shooting, we shut down for what was supposed to be a 2-week break for COVID. So by the time that the production started back up, that, you know, 4 or 5 months later, I was already onto a different show. So I didn't end up producing on the ground with him for the first season, but I did get to, you know, come back and take over the story for him for season two, which was an incredible honor and a really, really welcome challenge.
And Patrick was on our program a number of years ago, Ashley. We did a wonderful show for sci-fi called Happy with Chris Maloney of Law & Order SVU and Now Organized Crime, which ran 2 seasons. Wonderful show, by the way, and a terrific producer.
Thank you. Yeah, we did that show together as well, on the ground producing that show. That was one of my biggest sort of, I think, hurdles in my career. I got staffed on that show. That was my first writing credit on Happy. And that was a very fun, incredible show to produce.
Also, given that this is the holiday season, one of the most unique holiday tales told in recent years.
Yeah. People always say, what's your favorite Christmas movie? And I say Happy Season 1. No question. Mm-hmm.
So with all of the plot lines that Dr. Death has done on podcast, what made this stand out to you and Patrick to do as the follow-up to the first season?
Well, you know, he when he created the first season and kind of like was conceiving this anthology series, it was always the baseline for the show was always going to be systemic medical failure, you know, issues with the way that we run our medical systems. And so what was exciting about this season was we got to take that same concept and we got to take it global, which was important for, I think, both of us, because we think of this a lot of times as an American medical problem. And this sort of like let us expand it out and show that even in places where they have, you know, incredible socialized medicine, if you're putting a profit and a bottom line above your patients, you're going to fall into these situations where doctors are going to take advantage. And that I think for both of us felt like an important story to tell, to take it to the next level. And in addition to that, you know, Patrick always brings this up, and I don't think it clicked in my head until actually pretty recently that our three whistleblowers, our three kind of hero doctors, were a lot more complicit in the rise of this Dr. Death, of Paolo Macchiarini, than our season one kind of heroes, who were a little bit more straightforward, altruistic, and sort of white hat. You know, they saw something was going on and they immediately reacted and tried to fight it. And this season we're dealing with three doctors who were co-workers and colleagues and maybe watched a couple lines that get crossed themselves that wouldn't quite sit well, but were able to kind of eventually realize what they were doing and turn it around and fight for the right thing. And so that complicity, I think, helps show how people like Paolo Macchiarini can kind of continue for years and years and make these really objectively wrong choices, but in the moment it's sort of like you see how that line sort of slowly, you're crossing that red line a little bit by little bit, and you see how that sort of what that red line becomes, it sort of shifts with you. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and also something else that's interesting about this season compared to the last season is that unlike the last season where you had a doctor that was truly a villainous, you know, straight through, this character, played by Ed Ramirez, is somebody who is worshipped by his fellow constituents, by his fellow doctors. Like, you know, you've got something here that's really, really great, and you're like, you know, you're like almost a demigod, let's say. And of course, it ends up that he ends up being on the foul side of things.
Yeah, I actually think it's a little bit scarier because he didn't come into operating rooms and maul his patients. You know, it took years for this medicine to break down. It took years for this, you know, it's a biosynthetic trachea is the kind of medicine that he practices, in this new kind of technology that he's developed. And so it took years for these tracheas to break down in people's bodies, which sort of gave the illusion that everything was going okay for a while before people, I mean, everyone died. So he to me is a little bit of an even more kind of like sinister or insidious, you know, villain.
What
and he also,
saying,
you know,
about,
yeah.
No, go ahead, Ashley.
No, please, you go.
No, I was about to mention that it's very interesting how you got the stars to be in this, both Edgar Ramirez mm-hmm. and Mandy Moore. Edgar Ramirez seemed to really be like the character. And Mandy, however, mm-hmm. this is someone you got to literally change her whole life overnight after having a baby to do that role,
yeah.
this role, which is a newspaper reporter who uncovers the situation with this doctor.
Yeah, it was as surprising to me as it might be to you. It was a tricky thing to find somebody because Edgar inhabits this guy so beautifully that it's to find somebody that can kind of stand up to him and be a scene partner and be somebody that you sort of trust on screen enough to believe why somebody like this character would fall in love with him despite all of these. What we can think of as red flags, that's a tricky line to balance. So, you know, when her name came up, it was like, I mean, does she want to do it? It was sort of like, it wasn't thinking about whether or not she was right for the role. It was more of a do you think she would be interested? And when she, I mean, we talk about this all the time. I'm like, I don't know what you were thinking. And I'm grateful that she felt there was something in the scripts and the character that was worth picking up her family and Taylor and her kids and just driving them, you know, flying them across the country and committing herself to this world. Cause it's also, by the way, like a dark character to inhabit for that, you know, for 5 months of your 6 months of your life.
Yeah. And not only that, but she didn't have much time to research the role beyond listening to the podcast.
No, I think it was like, does she want to do it? She does. Oh my gosh. Okay. Let's fly her in. We'll do some fittings. And then we start shooting in a week. So we did, you know, we did some table reads but I think it's okay because we had all of the podcast was such an incredible, asset and the interviews with, you know, the real life Benita were important, but Mandy was also able to take that character and make it into something different because, you know, I don't know how if she feels this way too, but I feel like there's almost a danger in getting too sucked into the real life person. And we always said from the beginning, this is not us doing our very best impression of a person that's real in life. You know, I worked on The Girl from Plainville and Elle Fanning did this incredible transformation to become what we saw on TV and in the newspapers and online of who this girl, Michelle Carter, was. That was not what this was going to be. This was Mandy taking a character based on a real person and taking it and creating our Dr. Death character out of it.
Way back when, Jack Klugman, who was doing an episode of The Twilight Zone, his first called The Passage for Trumpet. Later on, he played a doctor, Quincy, for a long time on NBC, decided to get a trumpet player to have him learn how to finger the trumpet for the scenes where he had to do that on camera. I understand that Edgar, for his role, he spent a lot of time with surgeons to really learn, like, how do I do this procedure? How do I do surgery in general to make sure that my character really does come across as, yeah, I know what I'm – maybe I know what I'm doing as a surgeon, even though I'm a terrible person.
Yes, and that was even more important this season than last season, you know, with Dr. Dunch, it was like he could have been a little clumsy. Josh Jackson could have been a little clumsy with a scalpel, and that would have been okay. Yeah, you know, we got a little lucky because Edgar had played a surgeon in the past, so he had some training, but he, Luke Kirby, Ashley Madikwe, Gustav Hammerstein, like all of the doctors in the show went with our surgical tech, and they went to real life surgeries and they were able to witness that and see what it was like in the OR. And then we always had our surgical tech on set with us for both rehearsals and then actually while we were shooting to kind of show them, making sure that we're not, I am sure that you will be, if you are a surgeon, you will be able to tell which scenes are the close-ups of our surgical tech doing an incision and which are Edgar or Luke. But we, you know, we got it as close to reality as we possibly could.
We're speaking with the executive producer, showrunner, writer of the second season of Dr. Death, Ashley Michael Hoband. She joins me here in New York on Tamavi Televised this Wednesday afternoon, live and vivo from the big city. Simon, I'm with you live also from Nueva York, 48 degrees near the bottom of the hour. If question or comment remaining minutes with Ashley, make a call and make it count, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04. My name's Showman James, just got into our chat room. Thank you, Snowman. Happy to have you here. He's got a nice little emoji, so I think he likes what he's doing. So if you got a question, put it in the room or feedback. Put it in the room and make a call, 646-652-2906. Incidentally, if you haven't heard, there's also a companion documentary that is also running on Peacock on the subject matter of this season two of Dr. Death. Well, Dr. Death, Cutthroat Con Man, you can also find that on Peacock, available on smart TV sets, devices, multi-channel bundles, and also in some cases through your local cable operator. Again, we will be back with you in 2024 with a triple header to kick off the year. At three episodes coming your way, two back-to-back, Tuesday and Wednesday of next week, and then on Friday, and once again on Tuesday, one of our guests will be from the interesting service Fast Channel Television, Chief Executive Russell Floyd. Again, that's next Tuesday, Wednesday, Friday, 3 p.m. New Pacific, right here on Tamavi Televised. I know you did not see the Netflix documentary about the subject matter, Bad Surgeon, but did you have a chance to see the Cutthroat Con Man that's also running on Peacock before you started?
They came out at the same time. So Cutthroat Con Man was our companion piece on Peacock. So that came out the same day. And so I was able to watch that, which was super fun to watch. Because, I mean, it's a different – and this is what I think about Bad Surgeon as well. You know, I think any more eyeballs on this story for me is a positive, is a net positive. You know, there are so many ways into this story. And I think there's a lot to be gleaned from the different angles. But, you know, obviously what makes our show, the series, on Peacock a little bit unique is that we have these characters that were composite from a ton of different people that were working to hold Paolo Macchiarini responsible. So we sort of have these like unique characters in Luke Kirby, Ashley Madikwe, and Gustav Hammerstein's characters. And those were fun to write. And I feel like those kind of give you a little bit of something a little bit different. But yeah, the companion documentary on Peacock is excellent.
What do you think about how doctor or medical shows have evolved from where they started back in the 50s? And 60s with shows like Ben Casey and Dr. Kildare, to shows like Medical Story, which was one of the first to really get into the darker side of the profession. Abby Mann, mm-hmm. the great writer from Judgment Nuremberg, wrote that series, was executive producer on it. And then something like Dr. Death, or something like Medic, for example, which was one of the first shows to be scripted about the world of medicine that was actually shot in Los Angeles hospitals by a marvelous man named James Moser, who was the creator of Ben Casey and a big worker on Dragnet. And also, his first episode had The Birth of a Baby on the air, which was a very big experience. But I'm curious what you think about how medicine and the world of medicine is now portrayed on TV with shows like this.
Oh, my gosh, those were so many amazing deep cuts. That's amazing. I think about it sort of in the same way that you think about like 50s sci-fi, where it's sort of like you have like good government versus science, good or bad. Like it feels a little bit black and white. So it's either a good doctor, bad doctor. I'm hoping that we're shifting, especially in this sort of like true crime realm, into a place where we're delving a little bit deeper into what drives people and what makes these people, as opposed to just a sort of black and white good guy, bad guy situation. You know, I hope that when people watch Dr. Death, they take away, obviously this guy did a lot of bad things, but he had his argument and he had his reasons for doing so. And I think I'm seeing a lot of that, you know, in all these medical shows, even like, you know, I have to like call out Jennifer Morrison, who directed the first four episodes in house. Like, you know, you've got that show took medical shows to a different level, because you're talking about a complicated anti-hero saving lives. And so I think that there is a lot more gray in the stories that we're telling as people kind of get more educated or more involved in their own medical, you know, their own medicine, their own health, whatever. And realizing that, you know, doctors are people doing their best. And so that involves some gray area.
And incidentally, you actually have two women directing the whole thing this year, the whole season. Jennifer does the first four episodes, and Laura Felzi does the other four. Was that in the cards to do that, or is it just that fame and fortune happened to go that way?
Honestly, it was fate. Jen and I, you know, she was on the first season, and she had directed a couple of episodes, and she did such a fantastic job. And when we got together to chat about what this season was, she and I had a sort of immediate connection, like kismety connection over the cinema of it and how we wanted it to feel different. And we started getting into conversations about like Antonioni, and then that was it. It was just like, okay, this is done. I want you to come direct these. And I met with a lot of people. And honestly, I mean, as it is now, as it is going to be again, it is a busy field out there. And so finding the right person who was available, where the dates worked out, it was tricky. And Laura Belsey came, and we have known each other for a long time, 10 years or so. And she was really excited about the concept and the sort of ideas that Jen was putting forward, and to be able to take those and evolve them, because the back half of the season does have a different, you know, we get real dark in the back half of the season. So there's a different tone to it. And it was just, you know, it just happened to be that it was two of the right people to direct this show that I really, you know, loved. And I think they both did an excellent job.
Well, before you leave us this half hour, here's your chance to maybe make some news. Is there a Dr. Death Season 3 in the works?
Oh, I wish I could give you the breaking news, post-Christmas breaking news. We don't have anything in the works right now, but, you know, honestly, I just hope everybody watches it so that we can get a third season, because I know we're all really loving this world and this space, and we would love to continue. I would love to keep doing it. You know, I'd love to keep making stories about Dr. Deaths and the heroes that fight them. So let's everybody tune in to Peacock.
Well, you can. Dr. Death Season 2, along with the companion documentary special, Dr. Death Cutthroat Con Man. They're both running on Peacock. Again, it's available on smart TV sets, devices, multi-channel bundles, and some areas of the country through your local cable operator. More details about the program and the service online, go to www.peacocktv.com. That's www.peacocktv.com. Dr. Death Season 2, based on the popular Wondery podcast, now running on Peacock. Ashley Michael Hoban, thank you so much for coming on. Congratulations to you, Patrick, everybody involved on what looks like a superb second season, and hopefully many more to come.
Thank you so much. It was so fun chatting with you.
Same here, Ashley. Take care. From us to you, have a wonderful rest of your 2023 and a superb 2024 ahead. And best to Patrick and everybody else, too.
I will. Thank you. Happy New Year.
Thank you. Same to you. All the greatest. Take care. Ashley Michael Hoban joining us live in New York again. Dr. Death Season 2 now on Peacock. More tomorrow will be televised after these words from the fine folks at Liquid IV. You know, if you are looking for a great wellness routine to kick off 2024 and make it happen throughout the year, and it's easy to take too, keeps you in hydrated shape as well, well, we got the answer for you. It's Liquid IV. It's a great-tasting drink mix in sip form that when you add with water, delivers hydration to your body faster and more efficiently than just water alone. And what's more, you get five essential vitamins, B3, 5, 6, 12, and one of the big ones, vitamin C2. Plus, you get three times the electrolytes of traditional sports drinks. There's 12 flavors to drink from. They're all delicious and refreshing, like Concord Grape, Passion Fruit, and Watermelon, plus sugar-free flavors, too, like Green Grape and Peach. And don't forget, Liquid IV is gluten, dairy, and soy-free. All you got to do is go to liquidiv.com to order. And you get 20% off using the promo code TELEVISED at checkout. That's 20% off anything you order when you shop for better hydration today. Use the promo code TELEVISED at liquidiv.com. That's liquidiv.com. If you want something refreshing and healthy to go for 2024 on, it's Liquid IV. fueling life's adventures with real hydrating. When we come back, our annual salute to the men and women in front of behind the camera who passed this year. Tomorrow be televised remembers. Coming your way after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. Listen to the best internet radio on the planet, www.blogsofradio.com, speaker.com, and tune.com. Together reaching more than 100 million listeners around the world every month and growing. If you want the full picture on what took place in the world of entertainment this year, check out the Vast Entertainment 2023 special on BTR tomorrow, 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific. Vast Entertainment 2023, a special BTR presentation tomorrow, 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific, exclusively on Blog Talk Radio. And remember, best BTR 24/7 on YouTube. Welcome back to the second half of Tomorrow Be Televised, our next to last episode of 2023 on this Wednesday afternoon. 48 degrees at the bottom of the hour. Sam Alman with you live from New York. Thank you again for joining us. Most of our half hour will be our annual salute to Marby Televised Remembers. And first, we want to let you know that this half hour is brought to you by online grocery Sun and Swell, offering a world of delicious snacks and pantry fave anytime. A number of years ago, I had the chance to see a very special featurette that Turner Classic Movies has run every year since the mid-1990s. It's called TCM Remembers. And it's very simple. It is a wonderful, wistful, melancholy tribute, very appropriate, very respectful, of the women and men in the world of film, both in front of and behind the camera, who passed away that year. And it was done in such a way that if somebody happened to pass away very late in the year, while this featurette was running the last 2 weeks of a given year, that could be included and included seamlessly. The people behind TCM Remembers, I think, do a fantastic job every year. And lo and behold, they have done it again for 2023. If you haven't seen it, you should, either on Turner Classic Movies at TCM.com or on YouTube. It is absolutely wonderful. This year, they have the people who passed away wonderfully reflected while there is a performance of someone acrobatically using a piece of rope hung from the ceiling. It is really, really wonderful and superbly well done, as they always do. It's always comprehensive, and it's, I believe, the people who do this should be doing the Oscars and the Emmys in memoriam. And accidentally, later this half hour, we're going to get some feedback on a proposal I made through YouTube a few days ago to have, in fact, the Oscar and the Emmy people do just that, hire the TCM Remembers people for this. But first, this is the seventh or eighth time we have done this. We once again bring you, without commercial interruption, Tomorrow Be Televised Remembers. And as always, we start with the people off camera. We should point out it is not a total list. Obviously, I'm sure because of time, because we want to get a lot of thoughts in about the people we are going to talk about, we can't put in everybody, but we try to be as comprehensive as we possibly can. We'll start with the people off camera, and we start with one of the great musicians and composers of all time, Burt Bacharach. He passed away this year. Of course, we know him from the wonderful songs he did on his own and with Hal David, his lyric writer for so many years. And certainly his music filled many a variety show and variety special. And his instrumental theme, Nikki, became the theme of a groundbreaking show on ABC, The Movie of the Week. Bill Butler was one of the great cinematographers of episodic television in the 1960s, and then he became a film cinematographer and one of the best. One of his great works, Jaws. Elliot Silverstein, who passed away a few weeks ago, was a marvelous theatrical director and then a director in episodic television. One of his first credits was the Obsolete Man episode of The Twilight Zone, one of the most controversial in the series' five-year history. It was that episode and how he dealt with a film editor that led to a controversy that behind the scenes led to a very important development, the Director's Bill of Rights on the Directors Guild of America, which allows episodic TV directors and film directors to have more control over what they do. Silverstein went on to do a marvelous episodic series career in TV shows and then did some movies, including Cat Ballou, which won Lee Marvin an Academy Award for Best Actor the year it came out, and A Man Called Horse, with one of Richard Harris's most memorable performances. William Friedkin is better known as the director and the Oscar winner for The French Connection, The Exorcist, so many other interesting movies over the course of his career. However, A, he started his career as a documentary producer for David Wooper on television, and B, he came back to television to do a marvelous TV movie, Meet the City Showtime version of the classic play 12 Angry Men, which involved George C. Scott and Jack Lemmon. He did a marvelous job with that remake of that classic TV play, then later movie. Riku Browning, to some people who know the trade of underwater cinematography, was one of the pioneers on television with programs like Sea Hunt and Flipper. Of course, he was also known for playing the creature from the Black Lagoon before that. Riku had a fantastic career in television, and he passed away this year. Carl Davis had his first work as a TV composer on the documentary series narrated by Laurence Olivier, The World at War, which you can find episodes on YouTube. He did much, much more. In more recent years, he was the person who composed marvelous music to accompany silent films on TCM Silent Sunday Nights and on presentations at movie theaters around the country. And then there's Norman Lear. Norman Lear, one of the great, great entrepreneurs in television, the person that changed the face of situation comedy for the better and for the greater, with shows like All in the Family, Maud, Good Times, The Jeffersons, and so forth. From first to last, at the age of 101, Norman Lear loved doing unique television. Before he did sitcoms, he did variety shows, such as the Tennessee Ford Show for the Ford Motor Company with his partner at the time, Roland Kibbe, and the two-season Western for NBC with Henry Fonda, the deputy. It was our pleasure to have Norman Lear on this program when he did his autobiography a number of years ago. We did 45 minutes with him. I consider them one of the great highlights of my journalistic life covering television. I wish we could have had him again. He was truly one of the most brilliant people in TV history right up to the very, very end. And the great news is that hopefully next year we will see the work he had been working on the last couple of years, including for Netflix, an animated version of Good Times, a very interesting show about a gay person in the Marines called The Corpse, and several shows for Amazon Freebie, and maybe the revival of Mary Hartman, another groundbreaking television work. Bruce Gowers was one of the great television variety show directors. If a show was good, chances are he was behind the director's chair. Scott Satin was was one of the great game show executive producers and creators. One of his works, still on the air, Funny You Should Ask, which recently got a primetime showcase on CBS through Byron Allen. We had Scott on when he did the first season of that series, and he kept doing it until his passing. John Jakes was an author, and one of his books turned out to be a groundbreaker for television stations of an independent nature. It was The Bastard. It was the first of the Operation Primetime television shows. It made Andrew Stevens a star. One of the sequels of that series was also done later on for Operation Primetime, and John Jakes was the person who originated that whole. Peter Werner was a wonderful writer and director. He did 30-something. He did many, many other shows, both comedy and drama, in the course of a terrific episodic TV career. Dwayne Poole was a writer on everything from comedies to kids shows by himself and with other people. He passed away this year. Herb Lazarus, for many, many years, one of the top TV syndication salespeople. Many an original daytime or primetime syndicated show was under his tutelage. And earlier today, we learned that David Leland was one of the directors of Band of Brothers and other miniseries. He passed away earlier today. So that is our list of Tomorrow Be Televised members off camera. And now, what a list of people on camera. And we start with a wonderful actor named Alan Arkin. Yes, you know him for such movies as The Russians Are Coming, The Russians Are Coming, his Oscar-winning Turn Little Miss Sunshine, The Heart of the Lonely Hunter, and so forth. However, he started his career in TV, in episodic television, including a memorable episode of East Side, West Side, produced here in New York with George C. Scott, called The Beatnik and The Politician. Check it out on YouTube. Wonderful performance. And then later on, in the midst of his film career, he did do television, first made-for-TV movies, like The Affection of Simba Chitra, which I believe was nominated for an Emmy Award for. And then he did the first high-definition drama that was done for A&E back in the 1990s, 100 Center Street. He was the judge on that show. He was a star. He was really great for two seasons. Piper Laurie's career also began in television in the days of the golden age of live television drama, including the Playhouse 90 performance opposite Cliff Robertson of Days of Wine and Roses. That was before she turned to film, won an Academy Award nomination for her work in The Hustler with opposite Paul Newman. Later on, Carrie with Sissy Spacek, and also did the TV series with Carl Malden, Skag, critically acclaimed on NBC, only ran 6 episodes. Yet, a marvelous, luminous talent. Cindy Williams, what can we say? The great team member with Penny Marshall of Laverne and Shirley, and so much more. Barry Newman, his movie, The Lawyer, became the TV series Petrocelli for 2 years on NBC with him in the title role. Then Ryan O'Neill, we just lost him a few weeks ago. We had the classic trivia question about him. His TV work started his career with Empire, opposite Richard Egan on NBC in 1962, and then a year or two later, Rodney Harrington in Peyton Place. And that has got his career growing big time, later in film, and then later came back to television, including his final work for NBC back in the early 2000s, Mismatch. Richard Roundtree, the epitome of John Schaff, first in movies, and then a series of made-for-TV movies on CBS. Frederick Forrest. Yes, a lot of people know him for film. However, he did do some TV work, including, I believe, an Emmy Award turn in a film I believe is called Larry, and he also did the first episodes of 21 Jump Street. He was the original captain that Stephen Williams later became on that popular Fox series. David McCallum. Oh, do we remember him as Ilya Kuryakin on The Man from U.N.C.L.E., and then for all of us this generation, the scientist on NCIS for so many years. Another 1960s favorite was George Maharis. He first was episodic TV, and then he became the partner of Marvin Milner in the first three seasons of a classic, Route 66, the first and still one of the few television series that was filmed all over these United States. Gordon Pinsent was a Canadian and British actor, did a lot of work in Canadian television in various series and miniseries, also did a few here in the United States. And then Andre Braugher. We really got to know him with a Jackie Robinson portrayal in a TNT movie, and then came Homicide: Life on the Street, Detective Frank Pemberton. Oh, those scenes in the interrogation room, they were a thing of beauty. And then later on, Brooklyn Nine-Nine, Law and Order SVU, and so much more. And his wonderful turn with Emmy, with Men of a Certain Age, and later his Emmy-winning turn in the two-short FX series Thief. Andre was one of the great actors of the late 20th century and this millennium, and he will be profoundly missed. So will Inga Swenson, who was the maid on, and then later a big role on both Soap and then on Benson, the follow-up, where she really got to famous opposite Robert Guillaume. Frances Sternhagen, wonderful Broadway actress, off-Broadway actress too, did a lot of work in episodic television over the course of her career. Robert Blake, Beretta. After his great turn in Cold Blood and other movies like Tell 'Em Little Boy's Here, he really got going with his career after so many years prior as one of the R Gang Gang. His TV career really took off with Beretta for three wonderful seasons. And despite the craziness of his later life, he certainly will be memorized and memorialized in television for his work on TV is Beretta. Sharon Farrell, great actress, did a lot of all work as co-star or episodic TV co-star, guest star on many a show. Matthew Perry, his role on Friends, and other things too, including Studio City on the Sunset Strip, terrific, and The West Wing, and so much more. A wonderful actor, and Friends, of course, will be at the top of his TV legacy. Michael Gambon, the singing detective, wonderful British series, got some play on public television in the United States, other shows as well. Truly a terrific actor in the Laurence Olivier mold. Michael Lerner. You may not know the name. You certainly know the face. Did a lot of episodic TV. Was also in a couple of Oscar-nominated movie turns. Really terrific. Pee-wee Herman himself, Paul Rubens. He was much more than that, but, of course, it was Pee-wee Herman. I know you are, but who am I? That really kicked his career in high gear. We will all remember Pee-wee's Playhouse. We'll remember some of the other things he did, too, including playing a game show host in the short-lived version of You Don't Know Jack. Paul Rubens, a wonderful talent and a very versatile talent, both in comedy and in drama. Suzanne Somers got her first claim to fame opposite her soon-to-be husband, Alan Hamill, on his game show The Anniversary Game in syndication. And then came Three's Company, and She's the Sheriff, and her work in television was sealed. Treat Williams, first in the movies with Prince of the City and other wonderful films, then later on the star of Everwood, one of the CW's great hits in its first era. Harry Belafonte, a true entertainer of all time. He broke the TV mold with his specials, including his Emmy-winning one, Tonight at Belafonte. He did so much in television as well as in film and other mediums. He was a man for all mediums, and we had to definitely have him in this list. Jacqueline Zeman, one of the top soap opera stars around, Bobby Spencer on General Hospital, a wonderful, wonderful talent. Len Goodman, the chief judge on Dancing with the Stars. You knew that when the man spoke, he knew of his craft. He was a marvelous, marvelous ballroom talent. And thanks to him and everybody else working with him, Dancing with the Stars was a TV sensation still on today. And when it comes to game show hosts, nobody like Bob Barker and his great run for 35 years on The Price is Right, not to mention his run on Truth or Consequences and other game shows. Bob Barker, one of the great talents to come out of the world of game shows. Jerry Springer, a political commentator on local Ohio television, then, of course, doing his own show. Obviously, it started off great. Then came his move into unscripted, crazy reality, trash talk television. Sadly, he was one of the founders. It's too bad because I thought he was the original way the show was done, like Donahue and other shows missed time. He was really terrific. Later, Judge Jerry for the last few seasons. And a very interesting, one of TV's most unique national syndicated talents. Alan Holly, groundbreaking soap opera star, One Life to Live, one of the first African-American actresses to make it in the world of daytime television, scripted TV. Kelly Monteith, wonderful comic, had his own syndicated TV show for a season, very, very popular, and one of the popular stand-up comedians on the TV circuit. Adam Rich, one of the faces of Eight Is Enough, one of the kids, and that was his major TV claim to fame. Bernard Kalb, one of TV's best journalists for CBS and for NBC, later the original host of Reliable Sources, the original media review show on CNN, and later State Department spokesperson. No matter what the role was, particularly his TV roles, he handled them with dignity and class and a great emphasis on accuracy. Yoshida Yoda, you may not know the name, but if you're a fan of McHale's Navy in the 1960s, that's the guy who played Fuji. And did it so well. That was his big TV break. He did other things too, all of them really well done. One of the first Asian-American comedy actors to make it on television. Lance Kerwin, James at 15, James at 16, the family Hoback, one of the top teenage TV stars of the 1970s in drama. And you wish he could have done more. He was really, really good for his time. When it comes to the face of college basketball on television, there was no one better than Billy Packer. He was terrific, whether he did shows on the regional level, games with Jim Thacker for many years with C.D. Chesley. That's how I first saw him as a student at American University. But then later on, his work on NBC and CBS with wonderful talents like Dick Enberg, Al McGuire, Brent Musburger, et cetera. No matter who he was with, he always had his A game when it came to college basketball commentary. And he was willing to go the extra mile to please the viewer, not just the sponsors or the sport itself. Lisa Loring, Wednesday on The Addams Family. Oh, boy, what a wonderful talent. And she did play a role in the revival Wednesday that did so well last year with Jenna Ortega on Netflix. It's coming back for a second season, hopefully late next year. Tim McCarver, another wonderful sports talent. He, of course, was a great, great Hall of Fame-type baseball player. He was also a Hall of Fame broadcaster for many years with New York Mets baseball, but also on the national level, too. A superb, one of the best baseball analysts ever. Barbara Boston from Hill Street Blues played the made-to-worry former wife of Frank Furrow, the lead character played by Daniel Tregevanti. Barbara Boston, wonderful Emmy winner, terrific talent. And I believe for many years she was the wife of Stephen Boschko, the co-creator of Hill Street Blues, and many, many more things by himself and also with his partner at Hill Street Blues, Mike Cazal. Richard Belzer. Started in TV as a stand-up comedian when he also at one point was very big here in New York with Catch a Rising Star. And then, of course, later one of the key people with Homicide Life on the Street and one of the few to take his character and turn into a similar character, same name, John Munch, on Law & Order, Special Victims Unit for so many years. When it came to political satire on television, nobody did it in a more funny, factual way than Mark Russell. His specials on PBS that ran every few weeks, always marvelous. With a live audience and that great white piano, Mark Russell, somebody very special. Ed Ames, Ming on Daniel Boone, also forever known as one of the great Tonight Show highlights because of that tomahawk chop he did on the air. It still is one of the great highlights in the history of late night television. Phyllis Coates, The first Lois Lane on the Adventures of Superman. She also was a guest star on many a television show, both comedy and drama. And as Lois Lane, she may have been the first feminist of its kind on syndicated and certainly dramatic television. We had Annabeth Gish on this program early in 2023, the co-star of Anne Rice's Mayfair Witch on AMC. One of her first TV roles in a great TV and movie career was in a film called The Way She Was, The Way She Moved, excuse me, and she did it with a wonderful actor named Kamal Vilas-Reyes, who also did work in episodic TV, in movies, as well as in daytime drama. He passed away a few days ago. And finally, we found out a few hours ago that Tom Smothers, half of the Smothers brothers, passed away. Tom and his brother Dick literally changed the face of television variety and political satire at the same time with the Smothers Brothers Comedy Hour. That was not their first television role. Their first, a year or two earlier, was the Smothers Brothers Show, where Dick played a business person and Tom played the angel who got lost in a sea crash and came back to, well, to try to be a guardian angel to his brother, and turned out to be, well, not as great as you thought. It was sort of the It's a Wonderful Life on television. The show only ran a year. It was executed by Aaron Spelling, but did lead to Tom Smothers saying, you know what, if we do TV again, we want to do it our way. And they did, on CBS, with the Smothers Brothers Comedy Hour, for two wonderful seasons from 1967 to 1969. So many wonderful people got their start in that show. Pat Paulson, Steve Martin, Mason Williams with Classical Gas, so much more. Beatles did one of their last TV performances on the program. Pete Seeger, Waist Deep in the Big Money, and so much more. It was a sensational time, and it would have lasted longer had it not been for Tom's issues and Dick's issues with the CBS censors. They were able to revive the show several times, including for a year and a half run on their former network CBS. Tom also did for a year a syndicated show during the primetime access rule in the 1970s. You could tell that Tom Smothers was more of a brain than you thought. Of course, he was known for saying that catchphrase, "Mama always liked you best," to his brother Dick when he was on the guitar, and Dick, of course, was on the bass. Their performances live and on television in the 60s, marvelous examples of how you can combine folk song with fun brotherly comedy. And they kept doing it for so many years. As Dick's mother said in a statement that was released earlier today to the Entertainment Trades, the more we did, the more brotherly we became. And the more we liked each other and what we did, we became. And he meant that Tom was somebody who truly believed that satire could be expanded beyond what it was on television. And it had its place in variety shows, current political satire. And it certainly did. And you might say that if it wasn't for the Smothers Brothers Comedy Hour, there might not be a Daily Show. There might not be a Colbert Report. There might not be the way late night television is now. There might not even be Gutfeld. It was really Tom and Dick Smothers that got it going with the Smothers Brothers Comedy Hour. And having watched that show every Sunday night at 9 o'clock on CBS, I could tell you it was a laugh riot all the time it was on. And even though the other shows that they did not match up to it, they tried their best, and they usually did have their A or A-minus game on. It really is a shame it did not last too long. However, their act did for so many years after. And I'm happy to say that many of the Smothers Brothers Comedy Show programs and the Smothers Brothers Show, which does have its moments, you can find on YouTube. And I'm happy to say some of the Smothers Brothers also have commentary by Tom and Dick, and it's really revealing. So we're sorry to hear the news today that Tom passed away yesterday in Los Angeles from cancer, which he's been suffering for quite some time at the age of 86. He will be very much missed. I'm sure there'll be many, many tributes to him tonight and in the days ahead. And there you have our Tomorrow Be Televised Remembers for 2023. I'll be back in a moment. First, this word from the fine people at Sun and Swell. In case you don't know, Sun and Swell is the first online grocery store with a fine line of healthy, great-tasting foods that come to you in plastic-free, compostable packaging. Every item, whether it's rolled oats, trail mix, apple pie bars, energy bites, banana chips, nuts, and mango, is 100% vegan. It's gluten-free, and it's free of added preservatives or ingredients. So if you're looking for a more planet-friendly pantry, shop Sun and Swell. That's Sun and Swell. And when you do, you get 20% off site-wide. All you got to do is go to sunandswellfoods.com and use the promo code TELEVISE at checkout. That's 20% off your entire order when you use promo code TELEVISED at sunandswellfoods.com. A few days ago, I mentioned that I was doing Tomorrow Be Televised Remembers, and I saw the TCM Remembers clip for this year. And I was able to put in a note on YouTube that I had talked about on this program before, which is I'd like to see the Oscars and the Emmys, rather than use their own producers, use this, the people who do this featurette every year. And they would not have a problem to do, because TCM is considered the gold standard of these in memoriam tributes. They're always done every year. They're very comprehensive. They have a great worldview, and nobody has a problem compared to the Oscars and the Emmys, where every year there is a problem about who is left out. Well, I got some interesting responses to it. One that I got, one of the first, came from someone who said, well, you're not going to get your way because the Oscars, at least, they don't have the producers do the in memoriam statement. They have a committee that puts it together. Well, maybe it's time for that committee should think about giving the TCM people a shot. Look how much has been done for their people. Another one I got was for one of the people we did mention, Phyllis Coates, a couple of days ago, because Phyllis Coates was not in the TCM Remembers. We had it. Now, I think the reason, and by the way, they were like wondering, why is Phyllis Coates not in? Well, I can't speak for TCM, but I have a hunch. Why? Because she's better known for her TV work than her movie work. She didn't get really much in terms of television, bit parts. She did have a role in some of Joe McDoke's short films opposite George O'Hanlon, later George Jetson on The Jetsons. But most of her work was television, and I think that's why TCM did not put her in to their segment. But we did because of The Events of Superman and her television work following that. At one point, she was married to Richard Baer, who was the writer of the Joe McDokes and director of Joe McDoke's shorts, also later director of many great Twilight Zone episodes, and also the full-time director of Green Acres. He, by the way, produced some shows, too, in his career, and he died recently at the age of 101, just like Norman Lear. Really, truly amazing. Thanks again to our wonderful guest, Ashley Michael Hoban from Dr. Death, for being with us, Season 2. Again, it's on Peacock. Thanks to all of you for tuning in. I'd love to hear your thoughts about Tomorrow Be Televised Remembers. And incidentally, if you have somebody that we should have had, we'll put them in our Friday show, our next episode, 3 TV's New Pacific. That's this Friday right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. If you came in late on the program, want to catch up on an episode you missed, like this, for all year, well, go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Go to our website, tomorrowbetelevised.com, and all of our podcast destinations. And we'd love to hear from you. What do you think about our show today? What's your thoughts about where TV's at and where it's going? Email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. Find me at Simon Applebaum on Facebook, LinkedIn, and at UBCSimonWT on X or Twitter. However you respond, we respond back to you within 24 hours because what you say matters now more than ever. The views expressed are those of the participants, not those of Blog Talk Radio and other streamers of this program. Any show is featured as your manager, is Sonnenberg, head of content. Website supervised by On Podium, the internet's new podcast outpost, Guitar Sakis, is our web coordinator. Tomorrow Be Televised is brought to you by online grocery Sun and Swell, offering a world of delicious snacks and pantry faves anytime. And by Liquid IV, fueling life's adventures and your well-being with real hydrated. For Tomorrow Be Televised, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for your listening. We are back on Friday for our final episode of 2023. 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific. You know where. Blog Talk Radio, Speaker Tune Radio, and all of our web and podcast destinations. Whatever you're doing to now and then, make it safe and make it great for you and others you love. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.